Of California, KFWB takes you now to the offices of District Attorney Buron Fitz in the Hall of Justice in downtown Los Angeles, where Robert Arden, your foreign correspondent, will deliver an address to the peace officers assembled there. This is the first time that a representative group of law enforcing agencies is meeting for the purpose of joining forces and establishing close cooperation in the planned fight against the subversive activities of the Fifth Column. Mr. Robert Arden.
Good evening, everybody. This morning, the whole world received the shocking news that Le Roi Soldat, the soldier king of Belgium, had ordered his army to surrender unconditionally to the Nazi invaders. It is impossible at present to judge the exact motives which prompted the leader of the Belgian people to take this unexpected fateful step, and the world shall have to reserve final judgment for the future. All know that the heroic Belgian soldiers, for 18 long days and nights without respite, fought against overwhelming odds. We know that their task was made incredibly difficult by the hundreds of thousands of refugees who jammed an already overpopulated territory that grew hourly smaller under the terrific pressure of the Nazi surge. But we also know from a Paris dispatch that the Belgian cabinet, acting under Premier Hubert Pialot, dethroned the king and is going to continue to fight at the side of the Allies in the prosecution of their war against Nazi Germany. From this, we can guess at the reason, the ultimate motive force which compelled ex-King Leopold to expose his allies to almost inevitable destruction at this crucial moment, just when it began to look as if the French counterattack in the Peron sector had a chance to succeed. It was not just bad taste. It was more than that. And observers tonight were busy attempting to answer the one question. What would have been preferable to the Belgians? Fight to the bitter end or acceptance of Nazi domination with ensuing conversion into Nazi service. In other words, should men be satisfied to live as slaves under an unwanted and alien oppressor, or should they die in the defense of their God-given rights as human beings? As far as your correspondent is concerned, the answer to that question was given some 164 years ago by a handful of men who founded and defended with their lives these United States of America. Thus, the gigantic shadow which threateningly hangs over all Europe has moved on to the English Channel, just a little bit closer to our own shores. No longer can the vast expanse of the Atlantic Ocean be considered a safe barrier. It can, and has been, spanned in a few hours. No longer does political or economic isolation constitute a safe defense against foreign influences. Ideas cross oceans and mountains, and they cannot be stopped at political boundaries, even though they may be protected by armed soldiers. Their arrival is only noticed long after they have gained a foothold within the country. On April 15, a new word appeared for the first time in a news dispatch from London, which I quote, convinced that a Nazi fifth column of spies, provocateurs, and traitors was responsible for the lightning German invasion of Norway, Scotland Yard tonight began a roundup of suspects in Great Britain, unquote. Ever since, that word, fifth column, has haunted our headlines, newscasts, fireside chats, personal discussions, and collective thinking until it has become a veritable shadow over our lives, a shadow that instills doubt and fear into our hearts. Doubt and fear. Those are the two advanced sentinels which lay the smoke screen behind which the fifth column marches on. What is this so-called fifth column? How does it operate? What does it accomplish, and how can it be stopped? Those are the questions which are being asked every moment, everywhere. Well, here is an answer to those questions, an answer based upon facts gathered by your correspondent here, there, and everywhere. There are, roughly speaking, two groups which form the fifth column, the official and the unofficial representatives. The official representatives are in foreign consulates or embassies accredited with the United States government, trade associations, foreign chambers of commerce, and certain exchange institutes. All these are very often the outlets for poisonous propaganda sponsored by foreign governments for their own political purposes, which are quite openly directed against our existing form of democratic administration and intend to bring about a change in our social and economic setup by destroying our collective ideology of Americanism. It would be futile to attempt an enumeration of all the pamphlets, reviews, periodicals, and other printed matter that floods our nation. Radio stations, newspapers, schools, business organizations, even our private homes, all are on the lists of these ever-alert propagandists who, protected by diplomatic immunity, can freely disgorge their undiluted poisonous propaganda which their respective governments intend Mr. and Mrs. America to swallow. This kind of propaganda, however, can be easily detected. It is like a uniformed soldier who goes to war. He can be distinguished and recognized by his colors and thus perhaps even respected, because one knows what to expect of him, and if it's a fight he wants, one can be ready to meet him. This is not so easy with the second group, the unofficial representative, whose insidious and nefarious work is usually done under the hypocritical guise of friendship and apparently harmless acceptance of hospitality. This group is formed by so-called fraternal organizations, clubs, patriotic societies, in short, everything from cells to buns. That group is the most dangerous part of the fifth column. It sneaks into the country under false pretenses. It bores from within. It spreads fear and doubt by creating and continually fomenting dissension and discord among brethren. This group is the hardest to fight because it is hard to identify. It has very often been the case that people found some of their best friends to be some of the best agitators for any given foreign cause. Their first activity will always be to get a wedge into the national unity by destroying patriotism. Willingness to fight for the continued independence of a country is slowly being undermined by agitation for a peaceful isolation, which always entails total unpreparedness, the cause of total helplessness at the very hour when a sudden attack is made. Class distinctions are being advocated. One class of people mobilized against another. Tolerance attacked. Religion ridiculed, and when economic conditions cause temporary hardships, hatred is easily fanned into all devouring flames. The agitators know that very well. A people in doubt is a people in fear, and a people in fear can be easily conquered. To facilitate identification of members of this group, it is best to divide it into four main divisions. First, there are the spies. Under almost any excuse and in almost any conceivable appearance, is it possible to find men and women at work trying to get first-hand information on everything pertaining to our national defense. That information may be the blueprint of a new plane or a new speed car, a battleship or a tank, a new gun, or it may be, as we have just recently seen, a scientific discovery. It may only be a photograph of an airfield or a fortified position along a vital defense line, the picture of a harbor, or showing the position of anchored battleships. But once in the hands of the spies, this information becomes a marketable asset that is either sold to the highest bidder or given to the very government in whose pay the spying agent may be. The second group are the saboteurs, usually well-trained men whose duty it is to get into vital factories, industrial plants, railroad centers, in short, to penetrate into those places where one blow with a hammer or one turn of a switch will suffice to wreck the most vital points of our defense mechanism. America builds the fastest planes. The easiest place to destroy them, of course, is the assembly line. American tanks can be stopped best right in the factory. America's workers possess the greatest skill and the highest efficiency. The only way to overcome that is by disrupting their ranks and by inducing them to strike. The saboteur is trained for just that. His hammer is raised, his fingers can find a switch in the dark, and his tongue is well oiled. All he waits for is the word go. The third group are the traitors, men whose lust for power makes them easy prey for foreign agents who are able and only all too willing to pay a price, be that in cash or in promises of important positions in the future. That is the group from which emerged the Conrads, the Sizing Words, the Henlines and Quislings, men who did not hesitate to betray their own country for a promise that in some instances wasn't even kept. It is hard, very hard, to conceive of any man, particularly an American, to betray his fellow workers or fellow citizens to a foreign enemy. It is equally hard to conceive of an American who would deliberately sell out the traditions of Washington and Jefferson and Lincoln to a Hitler or a Stalin. But attempts may be made. These three divisions are the officers of the fifth column. The rank and file belongs into the fourth. This division contains very dangerous elements, since they are, as a rule, very hard to detect. They come as innocent-looking tourists. The same tourists which on March 13, 1938, occupied all available space in the Imperial Hotel in Vienna and took command of the Nazi troops the very moment Hitler crossed the boundary. The same tourists which in 1940 visited Norway and at a given signal occupied the radio stations which issued forged orders to the Norwegian coast defense units so that the arriving Nazi ships were not fired on. The same tourists which are flooding into Mexico right now. They are well-financed and, according to Washington reports, are carrying on an intensive anti-American propaganda through the Mexican press, labor organizations, and in the very government departments where many of them are employed as technical experts. Washington officials are viewing with grave concern the situation beyond our southern border. They have definite information that a fiercely fought revolution is being planned in neighboring Mexico after the national elections to be held there. Guns are being smuggled in considerable quantities, and both Nazi and communist agents are busy day and night with their endeavors to bring about chaos and destruction in Mexico so that they may then entrench themselves in key positions. No one will actually believe that this is merely directed against the Mexican Republic. There is not very much to be gotten there, but it would be an ideal spot to hold in view of the close proximity of the United States. And that brings me to another very dangerous specimen of fifth columnists, the sympathizer or fellow traveler. Without having the strength of his or her own convictions, these sympathizers are willing to advocate the principles of either Nazism or communism, to work for the various committees even without pay, but will never admit it. They are doubly dangerous, for those are the people who undermine the very ideals of the American tradition, who are not satisfied to enjoy the democratic liberties accorded and guaranteed them by the federal government, but who secretly work to undermine the very foundations for the government which so liberally protects and shields them. The agents provocateurs and propaganda agents of the rank and file have but one goal: to disrupt the morale of the broad masses. They constantly point to weaknesses in our system of government. They take sides in religious questions only to foment discord. They do and say everything that is fundamentally opposed to the principles of Americanism. The agent provocateur provokes discord, attempts to weaken us by dividing us against ourselves. That is the fifth column. European events during the last few months have been costly lessons to several nations there. They not only lost their independence, but with it, they lost their freedom and national identity. From free people, they were converted into Nazi serfs who have to toil and slave so that Nazism may continue its fight to conquer the world. We ought to learn that lesson while we still may do so without having to pay any of the terrific toll exacted from us. California particularly has a tough fight on her hands. For not one, but three different fifth columns are watching every inch of our priceless state. Thus, California authorities have the hardest battle to fight. Can I, can you, can any American do less than resolve to back our lawfully elected authorities to the very limit of our abilities? This is no fight for imperialistic reasons that is being waged in Europe. It is a fight between totalitarianism and the democratic ideal. An ideal that was expressed 164 years ago when our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Totalitarianism denies and wants to destroy these priceless principles of human existence. Its tentacles are creeping closer. To ward them off, we must stand together, firm in our conviction that we want no part of totalitarianism, that we stand prepared to act in fullest harmony, that this nation, under God, shall continue to enjoy its liberty, and that its government of free Americans, by free Americans, for free Americans, shall not perish from the earth.
If you desire a copy of Mr. Arden's speech, please send your name and address to KFWB Hollywood. After a brief pause for station identification, we'll return you to Robert Arden, your foreign correspondent.